Hello, this is Val Rapava-Roskin, and you're listening to Cherry Jam.
Hello, and welcome to episode 24, series 5 of Cherry Jam. Myself, Ed Price, Jim Harley, and James Eastwood, also known as Snowy. Russ and Loz unable to join us this week. We've got a bit of a special pod this week. We're going to be talking about a few things Gloucester-related, rugby-related, but we've also got loads of listener questions you very, very kindly sent in. Some of them rugby-related, some of them very not. And we will try and get through as many as we can. Any ones we don't this week, we will be doing probably again in a couple of weeks' time when we've got another spare week. But we are going to start off, though, with Jim talking about another, I think 12 in a row now, Gloucester-Hartbury win, this time over title contenders Exeter Chiefs. And Jim, you were at the game. I was actually at Birmingham City, which I'll come on to later, watching football. But give us your review of the game. You said it was a really positive win and a good performance.
Yeah, I think I'm just nervous whenever Gloucester play, men or women, because it's important. But I guess with the women now, I am a little bit more confident that they will win, even if they're playing against one of the other good teams in the league, because they have this aura about them at the moment, don't they? They're unbeaten and just confident. And obviously, they started fantastically, opening 20 minutes, total domination, really. The only thing that wasn't working was Emma Singh's boot, and she missed two, you know, for her quite kickable conversions. And then, as seems to be the way when we play Exeter, we had that fantastic 20 minutes where we dominated territory and possession. And then the following 20 minutes, it was kind of over to Exeter, and they showed what they can do. And I think it's good that they did what they did, because they really showed a weakness in our maul. They defended our maul really well when we had the standard kick to the corner and 5 meter line out attack. They defended really well, and conversely, when they had that opportunity, they scored, and they showed real dominance in that area. The scrum was a funny one, because it kind of, we looked like we had total dominance when they were going backwards at a rate of knots, and maybe Foley was being a little bit one-eyed, some might say, in not giving us the penalty. But I think, to be fair, going backwards quickly isn't a penalty offence. And the fact that they were able to go backwards quickly without doing anything illegal and get the ball out is sort of testament to the quality that Exeter have got in their pack. And they turned it around kind of as the game went on, and there was real scrum parity, certainly for the majority of the second half. So, yeah, we kind of went in at half-time down 12-10. And then I think, again, we just kind of just went away with it in that second half. Certainly, again, our bench just showed that we had no drop in performance at all. In fact, you know, with the likes of Cecilia Tilipluto coming on, it just kind of increased our power game a little bit. And we really did look very strong. So ended up Exeter scoring relatively late on and getting the two bonus points. But generally, I thought it was a really good performance, very controlled, good game management. And again, the likes of Mo leaving the field on about 60 minutes, you know, it was a good opportunity for some of the younger, less experienced players to come on and play against top flight opposition. So I think Sean Lynn's done another masterstroke. You know, we've got the 5 points, we've got the win, and we've rested players, we've rotated players, we've gathered some more first 15 match experience for the squad. So I'm hearing that more and more players are close to being back and playing next week. So hopefully we really will see the England internationals, you know, that have been missing for quite a few weeks with injuries, the likes of Zoe Aldcroft, who I think has got a little bit longer, judging by the fact she was sat in a chair in the shed at the weekend. But yeah, Tatiana is kind of there or thereabouts, Mia as well. So hopefully we'll be back to even stronger in the next couple of weeks, which is great.
Yeah. And by my rudimentary maths, I think we only need to win one more game and we're guaranteed a home semi if we win one more game. Is that right?
Oh, I haven't looked at the permutations.
So we're currently on 59 points. Saracens have got a game in hand and they're on 50. Chiefs 42, played 12. Bristol 41, played 12. There's only 16 games in a season. So one would assume, with that being the case, we will be we should be top two.
Which is a very nice position to be in. I mean, I know in Sean Lynn and the way things went last season, it wouldn't surprise me if we were to go unbeaten and then not be overly interested in going for the win at Saracens and be more interested in focusing on the semi-final. As great as it would be to have an unbeaten season, it's not about having an unbeaten season. It's about winning the thing. So, I can see us being a little bit clever when it comes to the tail end of the season and managing the squad even more potentially.
Yep, and they've announced this. They've announced the final location. It's going to be at Sandy Park on the 22nd of June. Don't want to tempt fate, but it's probably worth keeping that in mind.
Yeah, I have heard that terrace tickets are a fiver, so
yep.
I think I might be getting some.
Yeah, I think I'm gonna not tempt fate. I'm gonna wait until we know the girls are there, and then I think it'll be at that point I will be purchasing tickets. But we'll see. No, but it's really encouraging, really good result.
I think, you know, obviously Gloucester were announced as being the hosts last year, long before the end of the season. And it makes perfect sense that they follow that. And it makes perfect sense that it's Exeter, you know, they've got a fantastic ground. They've got fantastic support, which was noted on Saturday. Yep. Although they were mainly in the grandstand. Whereas the fans of the men's team definitely do come into the shed and make themselves known in there. I think going forward, I would really like to see the team that finishes top get that home advantage in the final, or the top seed, much like we've seen with the Premiership Cup and Ealing having the potential to host and getting beaten by Leicester, and therefore it goes to the second seed in Gloucester. I would imagine it's obviously hard to organise selling tickets kind of that late,
yeah,
not knowing the venue.
I think that's the issue, isn't it? I mean, we're a way off yet looking at Premiership finals at Twickenham. I think we have to be realistic that with that women's game, unless you decided to start, you know, combining it with some other fixture, probably not the men's Premiership final. I think that does it a disservice.
No, but
it needs to be
you
its own
combine
day.
Combine it with maybe a championship final or something, the men's championship final or something like that. But yeah, I think it would be great to have it as a bit of a carrot for going, you know, because what's the difference between finishing first and second? Bragging rights, you know, okay.
Yeah, but then again, you know, I suppose the argument being is that everyone knows what it's going to be like at the beginning of the season, similar to the men's game now. You know, the old idea around there should be a trophy for finishing first, I think that's long gone. And I think we just got to accept it. One thing I would say is with the game on Friday night, again at King's Home, under lights, against Harlequins women, obviously clearly not the same force as they were a few years ago, only won three games all season in the league. So you'd fancy Gloucester to pick up another win, probably bonus point. And and then it's just a case of probably managing the squad for the rest of the season.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, Harlequins have been quite disappointing this season. I'm not too sure of their injury list or anything like that, but I think they're a bit like Saracens, really. They're starting to get towards retirement age, and they don't have that conveyor belt of the best talent in the world coming out of Hartbury College, like Gloucester Hartbury do. So
no,
I think it's you know, it's a shame potentially that the league isn't quite as competitive as it used to be. But it does mean that fourth place is becoming a real battle between between Bristol and Loughborough.
And Exeter, yeah. Loughborough have got to win their game in hand. I mean, they're on 27 points at the moment, so they have to win their game in hand, and then they're going to have to get some good big results there. But yeah, it's shaping up. Certainly, the Exeter Bristol, you know, probably whoever. Let's be honest, neither of those will want to be playing Gloucester, so it's probably going to be a case of, you know, fighting it out to avoid Gloucester in the semi final. Thank you very much, Jim. Appreciate it as always. I think I might be able to come along on Friday night. I have struggled recently with the women's fixtures clashing with other things. But yeah, Friday night looks pretty clear.
I'm unfortunately going to have to run away at half time because I've got Skittles. Although it is Skittles at Wolves Club, so at least I'll get to visit that place
before it closes
this month. Before it closes, exactly. Although maybe if the fixture was for next month and it would be rearranged, then it wouldn't be an issue at all. So yeah. if they decided to close it earlier, it could have all worked out nicely. But yeah, that's I think I mean it's just another Friday night game. It just, you know, men's, women's, juniors, all of it. This just seems to be bonkers, the amount of Friday nighters. And I would be interested to see what Alex Brown has to say about all these Friday night fixtures, because.
Well, you'd assume the Friday night is because it's the Six Nations on Saturday.
Well, yeah, I mean, it's not clashing with that, but yeah, there seems to be a lot. I think it's upsetting a few fans. But that's another story.
That's another story for another day. Right, we're going to move on in this section, and we're going to talk about some rumours that have surfaced this week or over the last week around Gloucester and players being signed. I'm going to start with Snowy, because you were fairly affirmative and, well, fairly definitive, I should say. Not affirmative, that's the wrong word. Definitive, when the Christian Wade rumour surfaced. I think it was a no for you. Have you had time to sort of think on that a bit more, change your thoughts on it, or are you pretty firmly sticking with the no?
Well, the key variable that we don't know is how much he's going to cost.
Yeah, true.
So if he's on 50 quid a week, then do you want Christian Wade in your squad? Then yes, you do. You still have to give him kit. Like, there's overheads and stuff, right? He still eats at the club. He might damage some of the gym equipment or something. So there are always costs apart from the salary. But no, I mean, I'm joking. But That is the critical point, is how much you're paying him. Where does he... Now, he's coming from France, so he's probably on a fair old whack on that contract.
Yes.
That said, the trouble is, I said this in our sort of group chat, is that a winger like Christian Wade is best in their youth. Like, they don't age that well. Once that sort of edge of pace and sharpness and step goes and they have to rely a little bit more on strength, you get a lot less value for your money. Now, I'll be honest, I haven't really watched him play in France, so I don't know.
Yeah, it's difficult.
I don't know what sort of job he's doing and whether he's taking a sort of Johnny May approach and he's adapted his game a bit and now he's valuable in different ways. I don't know. I can't really answer that. But I mean, I certainly wouldn't want us to be paying good whack for him like we have done for some players in the past, where the level of value they're going to bring to the side just isn't that great.
Yeah,
I know we've talked about wingers before. We talked about, you know, replacing wingers that we've lost. It's very easy to bring young wingers through that do a job even at Premiership level. They're fast. They can catch. Their position is pretty good. You can bring them in. If you've had a couple of injuries, you can bring them in and generally they're not going to cost you a game. You know, it's a bit different to bringing in a 10 who's never played in the Premiership before, or, you know, a number 8 or something. So if that's where we're directing our funds, I'd be concerned. But if he's good value, then yeah. But, you know, it's always useful to have, you know, he's had a lot of experience as well. There's value in having an experienced winger that can help bring the youngsters through.
Yeah,
so, and, so yeah, I'm nonplussed by the announcement.
It's interesting. I think as we, I mean, we'd all agree. I think we'd all agree. But pre NFL jaunt, Christian Wade, we would have snapped somebody's hand off for him because at that point he was at the peak of his powers. But you're talking now what, four or five years later. He's 32. It's a different ballgame. As you rightly say, you know, players like Christian Wade, don't get me wrong, they're still going to have to offer something. It's just whether it's going to be at the level that that we've seen before. If we can get close to it, that'll be a hell of a signing. But it's going to be it's going to be some effort for him to get to that level.
And to be fair, when he was at his best, he was still a great player to have in the Premiership because he'll just rack up tries.
Mm.
But it was right that he didn't get many international caps.
Yeah,
because there are so many flaws in his game. Now, whether he shored those up, I don't know.
Yeah, I mean, certainly the international side. I don't really particularly care if a player gets capped or not, because as we've seen with England, you could be the best player in Europe and France and not get picked. So it's just a farce. Jim, do you want to come in on the Christian Wade?
Yeah, I was just going to say, I think Snow is absolutely right what he says. You know, we've had plenty of solid squad playing wingers in the past that have done a job. They've been solid in defence and solid in attack. They just don't have that X factor like Johnny May does when he's in his pomp. Like, you know, we've definitely seen from Zamit, and like, you know, we get from some of the others, and it would be wonderful if Wade's got that. But I think, you know, at his age, he probably hasn't quite got the step and the pace. And I think also he's not that big a name. You know, we're not going to get thousands of season ticket sales off the back of signing him. Whereas, you know, if someone were to be signing Yoluis Rees-Zammit, then that is, oh God, yeah, he's amazing. It's gonna bring in bums on seats, and actually I think maybe Zach Mercer probably wasn't a signing to get bums on seats. To be honest, I mean, he's a fantastic player, but he wasn't that household name that's gonna get.
Yeah, outside of rugby circles, it's gonna be, yeah, he's not the big name that you'd expect. But although saying that, there aren't many of those big name signings going around. Full stop. Are there?
No. I mean, I guess, you know, it's post World Cup. It would be someone that came out of the World Cup that was just became a bit of an overnight superstar. They're the only ones that you could probably afford these days, and I can't think of anyone. So it's unlikely we're gonna be snapping up anyone to really excite potential season ticket purchases. But I agree totally. If he's on a competitive salary and he's gonna be grafting and not being called up for internationals and things like that, which, you know, it's highly, unless he suddenly becomes the best winger in the world, then it's not going to happen, is it?
So I'll guarantee he doesn't get picked.
Yeah.
Yeah, quite. Yeah.
So I think it's got the potential to be, you know, a good squad player for us.
Yeah. The other name that came out this week was Gareth Anscombe. It has been mentioned before, but it seems to be a bit more concrete now, where there's been rumours of him being shown around King's Home.
No, he's now, if you missed today's news, he's been offered a one-year deal.
Yes, yeah, well, that's, I was going to come on to that. Oh, yeah. Sorry, you beat me to it. No, you're absolutely fine.
Ed's going to pretend he already knew.
No, that. Not at all. I did see that there's an offer of a one-year deal. And then the idea, I think, after that was to come back and play in Wales, was the assumption. I think that one makes more sense, because he's a guy who desperately needs to get back into rugby after having a serious injury. He's missed out on a year of Japan or a couple of years in Japan. He's clearly a talented player. He's just made of glass. And that's been kind of an issue throughout his career. Your thoughts on that one? So if it's a one-year deal, there's kind of a no-lose, really, isn't there?
I mean, the only thing you say might be a lose is that should we be bringing in a fly half that we're going to base the back line around for the next few years at this point. Mm-hmm. I'm not saying that is what we should be doing, but I kind of like the idea of, how do I rate Anscombe? Like, I think he's just like, he's got like 7 out of 10 all parts of his game.
Yeah.
Like, so quite dependable, like can tackle, has got a bit of like strength and bulk about him, can pass the ball quite nicely. He's not like amazing at anything, but he's like, he is a pretty good player. His big issue, as you mentioned, is that he's just always injured.
Yeah.
That's always like a bit like Moneyball. How much do you wait on that? Because are they injury prone, or have they just had bad luck and you might get lucky and you have 3 years without any injury issues? But I mean, maybe that gives, I mean, Atkinson isn't that young, 22, 23, but
yeah,
it's another year where you think he's going to get game time.
Mm-hmm.
So maybe that's here to say, look, is he actually the future? And we can step him up. Or do we, the risk is we get to the end of next year, we've had Anscombe for a year, he's been injured half of it, we still haven't got a good fly off to base the team around, and we sort of start again.
I think the additional benefit of Anscombe, and why I was kind of thinking actually this all makes sense from our point of view, is he can also play fullback. There's a bit of flexibility there, so he can play fullback, he can play 10. We've got Sansa who can play fullback and 10. At the moment, we've got Lloyd Evans, who can kind of only really play 15 as a cover. We've got George Barton, who is basically a 10 and a 10 only. And then you've got Charlie Atkinson, who can play, who has played centre. 10 is his number one position. And absolutely, if you're at total loss, he could probably cover fullback.
We've got a million fullbacks.
Yeah. Well, we've got a number of fullbacks. We've got one really good one.
Yeah.
And the problem is if he gets injured, we haven't got a huge amount of cover. So I think that's probably
I think Evans is like I'm not quite sure if he'll still be around, because he's like our third choice fullback and our fourth choice fly half.
But I think he signed a deal, didn't he? I'm pretty sure okay, he signed another year
business.
Deal.
Yeah, good business.
I think he signed another year. So it's difficult. I mean, you've got to kind of play with the deck you're handed, isn't it, really? I mean, if Anscombe's available, we might feel we're a little bit short at 10 if we don't see Santi as a 10, which I get the feeling we don't.
I don't think we should either. Right? No. I think we're all on the same page, aren't we, with that one?
Yeah,
like the,
yeah. And I think George Skivington,
standing 15.
Yeah,
and when we need to, when we really need to mix the game up and change things, then he's done well at 10. But I think for us to try and base our game around Santi at 10 would be the wrong move.
Yeah,
we want a 10 that can bring Santi at fullback into the game.
Yeah, exactly. That gives him time, gives him space.
I don't think it's a bad move, but I guess that means that either we haven't got the money or there just isn't anyone out there at the minute that we can, because I do think it's a position where we really need to, we've made a lot of poor signings over the years at 10.
Mm. Yeah, Hastings looked like a good signing. It's just injuries have meant that it hasn't gone as well as we hoped.
Yeah, I think he looked, it's one of those that I think we all thought it was going to be a good signing, but actually it's just like, it's not just injuries. It's very hard to play around. And this is why he hasn't got more international caps. It's very hard to play around a fly half that you have to hide from contact.
Yeah.
And he's just not physical enough. And
no,
he throws himself into tackles sometimes like he's 3 stone heavier, which is probably why he keeps getting injured.
Yeah. I mean, I do think when Hastings has played for us, we have looked a much better side. I genuinely think he's been a positive from that point of view. It's just we haven't seen enough of him and hasn't been consistently playing 10. The one season he did consistently play 10 was the season we finished in fifth. So, correlation, causation, however you want to put it. I don't know. Yeah. But, you know, there's probably something in that.
I think we've all realised that having a player play like Hastings is what we need at 10.
Yes.
And George Barton can't play. He can't play that flat. It's just not in his game to do that. And I think what Snowy said about, you know, are we going to see Atkinson kind of step into that role in a year's time, which is why a 1-year deal, I think should work. And if the long term plan is Atkinson at 10, and we move into that over the next season, then I think that could be a really good move. And we will still have potentially Barton as a second choice, as Lloyd Evans as a emergency choice. You know,
I think Evans certainly will probably not be here come the end of next season. I think Barton probably will be there or thereabouts still as an option. But yeah, I think Evans is, I'm pretty sure Evans has got one more year left after this season. And I wouldn't expect him to be re-signed after that. But
yeah, I mean, for a player like him, it's strange, isn't it? Because would you rather never, well, hardly ever be playing for a Gloucester, or be playing every week for a Hartbury, or you know, a Championship team? It's you would think you probably earn more not playing for Gloucester than you would playing for Hartbury.
Yeah, yeah. Right, they were the two sort of in rumours. Not really even a rumour about a player who plays for us anymore, but just an unfortunate, sad announcement today as we record on the Monday. But Jake Pellegrini has announced his retirement from rugby at the age of 28. And I think probably if it hadn't have been for his absolutely appallingly awful injury, I think he would have been one of the stars of rugby for many years. He had everything you would ever want in a rugby player, and pace, power, hands, intelligence, and just unfortunately the cruel nature of rugby union and sport is that we're not going to see the best of him. We got close to it, and there's a brilliant, brilliant highlight reel that the club put up of some of his tries and some of his bish bash bosh Jake Pellegrini running over people series 1 and 2, and it, honestly, what a brilliant, brilliant player. It's just a shame we didn't get to see more of him.
Yep, it is. It's a massive shame. You know, when he broke onto the scene with Gloucester and with Italy, we all thought, oh, he is an absolute perfect replacement for Parise. I think he'd probably have 60-plus caps by now. If he'd have stayed fit, he would have been an absolute dead cert in that squad. And he would have fitted in really, really well with how they're developing now as well. Massive, massive shame for him. And unfortunately, kind of, we were right, weren't we? That, you know,
I wasn't. I was like, give him another contract.
Yeah, yeah.
Just it's fine.
yeah, and I think that's your heart talking, not your head, isn't it?
Yeah. But, well, yeah. I mean, you never know. You never know the ins and outs of it. But more's come out now, isn't it? Is that he had no feeling at all in his foot, paralyzed basically, and that slowly came back, and he hasn't been able to get his foot healthy again, injured it again, and then hasn't been able to recover from that.
Yeah,
so it's just desperately unlucky.
Yeah, it was the nerve damage that did him in the end, from what he said. I mean, and I think to understand the severity of his injury, if people weren't aware of it, it was as bad as you can get. And to actually even come back and play any rugby was almost superhuman in that regard. And I think you get the feeling that he was basically there trying to prove a point. He got that. And then unfortunately, yeah. As you said, a further injury, and it's just basically meant that he can't get to the levels he wants to, and he's being honest with himself. And I think, again, that's a very admirable place to be. I mean, obviously, he's got his own.
Sorry. Yeah, he's one of those players that where every time he played for Gloucester were a good notch better.
Yeah. Oh, easy.
Every single time, because it didn't matter if we were struggling in defence. When we got the ball, he got over the gain line every single time, one way or the other. Handoffs, finding space, getting his head down. Just, an absolute bulldozer. So
him and Mercer would have gotten quite well, I think.
Jesus Christ. Yeah, the only problem with this, I suppose the only issue you would have had is, where do you play? Would you play Pellegrini at six?
Yeah, I think so.
Probably, wouldn't you? Yeah. That would be unfair, I think. I mean, Pellegrini and Mercer running.
Yeah, and all our other quality back rows are all, you know, the captain trying to fight for his spot with everyone else.
But yeah, I mean, I think you can tell that there's a lot of love for him out there in the rugby community today, and I think people genuinely sad to see he won't be running on the pitch again. But he's also a really, really lovely bloke. Runs the obviously Just Press Cider, JP Cider, which is awesome. I have to be honest, it's very good.
Yeah, Blind Cider is a lovely drop.
Yep, it is very nice. Bumfer will knock your head off, and there's some. There's some berry. There's a berry one now, isn't there? Fratelli? Is it Fratelli? Which is the berry one? Like that. Yeah. But Blindside's lovely. Very nice, nice drink. So good luck to him. Hopefully we will see him in and around King's Own. I mean, the club have been very open and said, you know, more than welcome to come back, mate, and have a beer and have a.
Well, yeah. I mean, I kind of wonder what his sort of next steps are. I think it would be nice if the club could offer him some sort of role community wise or engagement, because I think he's got the potential to still be a good draw for business and things like that. So much like we did with Fanalua coming back and joining the community team for a time and things like that, I think if he is looking for work, I think I'm sure that the club could potentially put some his way, whether or not it would pay him what he needs. I'm not sure, but yeah, like you say, it'd be nice to see him in and around Gloucester.
Yeah, it would be. Right. Well, I want to just finish off this section with a quick chat about the England A. So Russ and I, Russ unfortunately not able to join us this evening, but Russ and I went to Leicester a week Sunday ago. To watch England A versus Portugal. When it got announced, Jim, I think because you were originally looking at games to go, but you weren't able to make it through for work commitments and stuff. It looked quite exciting because obviously Portugal had just come off the back of a very successful World Cup. England A hadn't had a game in about 6 to 7 years or something like that, and we thought, oh, this could be interesting, you know?
This is a team that have beaten Fiji. This is a team that are vying to, you know, knock on Italy's door and kind of start asking those questions along with Georgia about Six Nations entry. And you thought, well, England A, you know, it's not going to have the top kind of 40 players or so from England. I mean, that could be a really, really good kind of close fixture. Contest.
Yeah. And then Portugal put the team out. And mainly because they couldn't get release on nearly any of their players.
Because it's not in the international window.
No, so it basically, well, it was kind of in the international window because obviously it was the Six Nations. Anyway, basically.
Yeah, it's
yeah, they couldn't get.
I'm guessing they couldn't just, yeah.
No, so it was organised as everything is often with rugby, like a piss up in a brewery. They couldn't get their international players released and it was an England A side versus a Portugal C side. And the inevitable happened. And it was 50-0 at half time.
But the Portuguese seaside is lovely.
Portuguese seaside is lovely. I agree. Particularly if we want to do a reverse fixture, we would happily go and visit the Portuguese seaside. But yeah, unfortunately, finished 91-5, which I think flattered Portugal somewhat. Because,
yeah, it could have been 130, 140-0,
well,
couldn't it?
Well, I mean, England missed about 30 points in kicks. Not ideal. There's so little to gain and to sort of get out of the game from an England point of view, other than if you play attacking, exciting rugby, things happen, particularly against a very weak side. Portugal probably learned absolutely nothing other than their scrum is don't on a free kick opt for a scrum against England A, because that was quite funny. Welford Road, as per like King's Own, really lovely place to watch rugby. If you get down the bottom of the Cranby Terrace or whatever it's called these days, you know, right next to the pitch, you get a great view, really good atmosphere. There was 15,000 there, which is a decent turnout.
Good numbers.
Good numbers.
I noticed you referred to it as Welford Road, not Leicester Tigers Stadium.
Yeah, that's true. Cause you noticed something on the YouTube coverage, Jim.
Yeah. So I was watching it on YouTube, later that evening or the following day. Christian Day, isn't it? The RPL chairman, who was doing the commentary, which I thought was excellent, actually. It was nice. It's nice to get someone different doing some commentary, and brilliant that it was on YouTube and free to air and, you know, and available after the fact and everything. But yeah, because the Mattioli Woods bit, it was for some reason embargoed, and the RFU didn't want to promote sponsors. And because technically the name's Mattioli Woods, Welford Road, you can't just call it Welford Road. You've got to call it Mattioli Woods, Welford Road. So don't call it that at all. Call it Leicester Tigers Stadium, which seems bonkers.
Because it is. That's because it is. Because we live in a world of corporate nonsense.
I mean, you'd think as a sponsor, if you invest in your money in sponsorship of a club, of a ground, what have you, you buy into the fact that when that ground is on the telly, it gets mentioned. You wouldn't have the Carlsberg that's in the terrace at
Northampton.
Cinch Stadium at Franklin's Gardens. But you wouldn't have that Carlsberg pixelated, would you? You know, and it's, you pay your money, you get your you get your time in the limelight. But yeah, there we go. That's the corporate world that we live in sometimes.
Yeah,
I mean, it happens in the World Cup, doesn't it? In the World Cups.
Toyota Stadium
or whatever is not allowed to be called that, and it goes back to its non-sponsored name. So I kind of get it. It does happen with international fixtures that the
because you've got global corporate sponsors who are going to go, look, I don't want it to be called the Nissan Stadium if Kia are sponsoring the whole tournament, you know, that type of thing. But in relation to this, it seemed a bit petty and a bit silly. I mean, overall, good day out. I had a great time. It was a really pleasant trip. It's just a shame it wasn't more competitive. So it was quite boring. It was after about 25 minutes, 30 minutes, when we got to about 30 odd nil, it was a bit boring.
I know my son and his friends had a great day out.
Yeah.
And I think it's kind of, it's one of those. Much like the women's games are, you know, potentially, it's a far cheaper way to go and see an international game because it's not really a proper international, but it's that kind of opportunity to go and see live rugby that you may otherwise would not have done because of ticket prices and availability. You know, if it was England, New Zealand at Twickenham, you ain't going to get a ticket, are you? And if you are, it's going to be 120 quid plus. So it's much more accessible in that regard. And I think it's fair to say that everyone in the crowd, you know, had an entertaining couple of hours.
Yeah, and fair play to the there's quite a few Portuguese fans there, and also fair play to the crowd afterwards who gave the Portuguese team a deserved round of applause for the, I mean, if nothing else, for the sheer bravery and tenacity of just keep going until the 80th minute.
They didn't, did they? Their heads didn't drop.
No, it was last 5 minutes. You could tell they were basically breathing in fumes. They were struggling at that point, but they did. You know, there were little moments. Fair play to them, particularly in the first half. There were little moments where nice bits of play. But as I said, it was the equivalent of watching Gloucester play Cinderford. It would be exactly the same thing. And this is also why calls for an open cup competition, a la the FA Cup, would be just the stupidest competition in the world.
No, that'd be dangerous.
We used to have it.
We did, but it was before the gap between...
Yeah, it got bigger, it's true.
It got bigger. I mean, and the thing is...
In those days, we used to put 120 points on one of them or whatever.
Yeah, you know, you go back and those amateur days, up until about sort of the early 90s and mid-90s, you got shocks. Obviously, everyone talks about the Birmingham Solihull per temps bees as they were against Wasps. That was a really weird result. Every other result you ever saw, it would be close for about 40, 50 minutes, and then it would be, silly scores. And also because the Premiership teams often rested a lot of their players. But yeah, that in today's environment, even if you put a reserve side out against someone like a Cinderford or something like that, it would be dangerous.
Scrum time would be very dangerous, wouldn't it? Because you can't not do it 100%. Because if you don't do it 100%, you get injured.
You get hurt. Yeah, exactly. Right. We're going to pause. We're going to come back. And we've got some of your questions. I'd like to say thank you very much for everyone who's put them in. Sam Anstey, we're going to you're probably going to get quite a few of yours answered, mainly because they're a bit more quick fire. When we've got everybody back, we will be doing more of the in-depth questions that people have put in, just because it gives people a bit more chance.
Hi, this is Santi Tosino, and you're listening to the Cherry Jam podcast.
Right. Quick fire questions on from listener questions. Sam Anstey, I'm going to go through yours first of all. So thank you very much. A couple of them are really nice and easy. How far do each of us live from Kingsholm in miles, including Snowy? Well, myself and Russ are about 7 miles, I think, give or take, from Kingsholm. We live in south of Gloucester. In Hunts Grove. Loz is probably about a mile or two in from me. He lives in Quedgeley. Jim?
I'm miles, I don't like imperial measurements. I think I'm maybe 1.5. I think I'm about 3K away.
Right, that's about 1.5, yeah.
It takes me 5 minutes and 20 seconds on the bike without getting a sweat on.
Snowy, you're the one who lives in a ridiculous place. How far from Kingsholm? Do you know how many miles you are?
158. Thanks. Ooh. Google Maps.
Google Maps has done you.
It's not that much, actually. 158. I'm definitely going to cycle it one day.
You start off on a good downhill, don't you? That'll get you going.
Well, it is downhill. It's in the north.
Yeah, it doesn't really. hopefully, by the end of the year, I'll be 984 miles.
Yes, that is true. Yes. Yeah. That's probably harder to cycle though.
Harder, yes. Impossible, no.
Yeah, I look forward to your trip over the Pyrenees. That'll be fun.
Yeah, it will.
Yeah,
that'll be the best bit.
Yeah, no, it'll be brilliant. It'll be brilliant for us because we'll just watch your pain and suffering. We'll be all like, what a prat. Anyway, and I'm sure your lovely partner will. I'd be very happy for you buggering off for the best part of 2 weeks to cycle to Gloucester.
2 weeks?
Easy 2 weeks, mate, that. See, it'd take you a week to get up the Pyrenees.
Nah, 10 days. Right, Girona to Andorra, that's the known as the world's hardest commute.
Right.
There's a lot of the pro cyclists go up there for altitude, and they live in Girona.
Mm-hmm.
And it's basically uphill the entire way from Girona to Andorra.
So it's the hardest commute. It's the hardest commute there. The easiest commute back.
Yeah, the one. Well, I wouldn't say it's the world's easiest commute. No, but back. But it's a lot easier. Yeah.
Yeah. Second one that Sam sent in was, what do we all do for a living? I put you down already, Jim. You know you're a superhero firefighter, but do you want to give us any more details other than a superhero firefighter?
I'm a trainer, so I. Instructing safe working at height and breathing apparatus and lots of other things. And today I was doing some bikeability stuff because I used to do a lot of bikeability, training the kiddies on their bikes. So I was doing a bit of CPD for that today. So still do a bit of cycle coaching and rugby coaching as well because I coach at Long Levens.
Yeah. Because
I got my finger in lots of pies.
If anyone's ever unsure why every kid in Gloucester cycles through red lights, it's Jim.
I think you'll find that I'm a active travel ambassador.
You are so indeed. You get very annoyed when you see bad cyclists. Snowy, you can put this, make this as discreet or indiscreet as you want. But you know, what do you do?
I've lost visibility of you on my screen, but I can still. Explain it. I work for a Dutch technology company, working in fashion retail. Very exciting.
It sounds really exciting, mainly because he gets to go to Netherlands and Germany and places like that and exciting European destinations.
Yeah, and look at their NFC tags on their in bits of retail, and you go, "Oh yes, that's one of mine."
Loz is an accountant. Nice and simple. That's what he does.
And it is that exciting.
It is exciting. I work in finance, and I'm
it's
not
even more exciting.
And I'm not going in any more detail because it's just the most boring subject in the world. However, one thing we can all agree on, none of us actually know what Russ does. He's the Chandler of our group.
I know what he does.
He's a learning technologist. Is that what it is?
Yeah.
Don't know
he
what
looks
it
after,
is.
Do you remember when you went to uni, you had to use Blackboard?
No.
No.
No, because I didn't.
You're too old.
Because
yeah,
I'm,
you had to
I'm
use pen and paper.
And...
yeah. So after pen and paper, you used to have a website that you'd log into to do your learning and submit your essays and stuff. And that's probably come on a bit in 20 years. And that's what Russ works in.
When I was at Hartbury, I would have to print it off and I would have to have a card that allowed me to use the printer.
Yep.
And then I'd print it off and I'd hand it in to the resource centre member of staff and she would use a little stamp like you have at the library and it would time stamp it. That was how I used to hand in my assignments.
We would email them. So we were a little bit more advanced.
We didn't have email then.
No, I used to have to hand them in because, and you'd have to queue for the printer. And because I'd done it last minute, that was the most stressful bit, trying to get it in just before the deadline closed, but as a queue for the printers.
So we were allowed to email. And other than dissertation, which did have to be bound and done properly and then handed in that way. But yes, we were allowed to email. We'd actually got to that point.
I think so. What Russ does, what we've decided then, is Russ just make sure the emails work for when people send in.
Russ
their
hands
assignments.
Out. He hands those little cards out so you can print. That's what Russ does. I mean, you're He clearly does something more than that, but we're just.
He mainly complains about the public sector, even though he works in the private sector, which is a bit odd.
No, Russ definitely works in the public sector.
Well, he works for a university,
which is the public sector.
Really? Is it?
It's educational, isn't it? I mean, I think it is the public sector.
He was very busy COVID because all of a sudden he was the most popular man in the university. And then after COVID, they decided they didn't need him anymore. But actually they do.
Because he knows what he's doing. But yeah, so, I mean, some of this is going to get cut. But yes, in terms of Russ and his job, we think he's a learning technologist. We think we know what he does, but we probably don't. So he is very much the Chandler Bing of the group. Right, more Sam Anstey. If you could only go on holiday to one location and nowhere else for the rest of your lives, where would it be and why? Now, Sam hasn't given us a really definitive like structure for this because I think it could be, you could talk about a individual place or it could be a country. So which, do you want to go hard or easy on this one? Because I think if it's a country,
I'll give two answers then.
Go on then.
So I will go for, if I can only go to like one place, I go to America because it's massive and there's loads of different bits to it.
Yes.
And I've only seen, you know, a few bits of it and there's lots more I'd like to see and some of the bits I'd like to go back to again. So that's kind of easy, but that's a bit of a cheat because, so if I could only go to one place, it would probably be Mallorca because that's fantastic for cycling, which is obviously something that Snowy and I are big into. But it's actually, you know, family holidays and stuff I've gone, and I've gone there and not cycled. So I think that would be the one spot. And I think that's small enough to count for a single venue.
So you're saying one spot and you can't go anywhere else ever again?
You can keep going back to this one place.
But you're not allowed to go anywhere else.
But on holiday, that's the only place you can ever go on holiday. Jim has said, you know, I think it's fair enough. If you are struggling and you can only think of a country, stick with the country. But if you've got a place.
Yeah, well, I was going to say, because I really want to go to either Rio, South America, or Japan, because they're very different. But I don't want to go to either of those places only for the rest of the time. So, yeah, I'd probably say Spain then, because then you've got a lot of variety.
Yeah. Fair enough. I would have said same as Jim. I would have said America. I mean, I love America anyway, as you both know, and as Lawrence takes the mick at me repeatedly. Boring. Yeah, I do. But I love it. I think it's a wonderful place. People in it are brilliant. It's when they come over here or when they're in power. That's when it goes all horribly wrong. But yeah, I love America. But if I was going to pick a individual place, slightly more narrower, I would say Tuscany. I think it's just the most beautiful place in the world.
You'd be very poor if you were anywhere on holiday to Tuscany.
I know, but the food is just superb, and the views and the weather, and it's just ridiculous. It's what an amazing place. So yeah, that'd be my one. Obviously Russ and Loz can't answer. I would imagine Russ would be just anywhere out of the UK at this point. if we're going to be honest. Anyway, one more for Sam Anstey, and it was on the talking about American World Cup. So 2031, the World Cup is in the USA. What would be the one non-rugby activity or site you would absolutely have to do? You've got unlimited money available, I should say. So you could now, obviously it's going to be tied to the time you're over there. So it's probably going to be September, October, 2031. Is there one place that you'd just go, I've got to go and see that. I've got to go and do that.
I would go to Yosemite.
Good shout. That is a good shout. Particularly that time of year as well. Yeah. Jim?
I didn't do Yosemite when I was kind of in the west coast of the States previously. So I could potentially that would be.
I'll be there though. Does that put you off?
No, actually I think we get on well enough. But I think your holiday of, was it last year or the year before, Ed, when you kind of did New England and all that, Boston and stuff. I think I'd really like to go there. Obviously, I'm a big beer fan, and they've got some bonkers breweries kind of in some of those areas. So I'd really like to do a bit of a brewery tour. And I'd like to do a bit of a barbecue food of Texas and stuff like that tour as well. So I'm sure, because I'm due to retire just before that World Cup. So that'll be my plan to spend my commutation on traveling around the States and watching lots of rugby and making my life expectancy significantly less, probably.
This is one of the reasons why America is so good, because there's so much variety and so many places you can go. I'm lucky enough to have been to San Francisco and do that. I've been to Vegas. I've been to New York. As you said, I went and did New England.
We said, where do you want to go? We don't want to hear where you've been.
Yeah, I've been to those places too, Ed.
But I've never been to the South other than Florida. So I would probably like to do something like Nashville or New Orleans if I could choose. Probably Nashville. Just for the country music stuff, I think it's quite cool. And then I would say the other one, it's that time of year as well. It's the World Series, Baseball World Series. I mean, God knows who'd be playing, but that would be cool to go to a World Series game.
Yeah, I think if money was like not an issue, because I would get really funny. I'm too stingy to pay this like $150 or something to go to a basketball game or like silly money. You know, the Super Bowl, which I know is in like February, so that's definitely not the right time of year, but I would absolutely love to go to one, but I would absolutely not pay the money required to go to one.
Yeah, I think the cheapest tickets were going for near $2,000, I think.
That's not completely bonkers. I thought it would be more like 10.
No, I think the cheapest tickets were sort of like $2,000, which is what? About 1,200 quid, 1,300 quid-ish, I think. Something like that.
Well, club members get a very small allocation as well.
Yeah. But like, you know, actively being able to get a ticket, you're looking at like $2,000. Yeah, that's the thing. It'll be cool. I mean, one thing I would say is that our good friend, Bill Batterson, who's... who is very much enjoyed our chats about the NFL the other week. I say enjoyed. Gritted teeth, I think, would be a better description.
We're just making him realise what it's actually like, because he what would he know?
So he did say he's very much hoping that Pittsburgh get an England game. Pittsburgh gets selected.
So are we.
Well, yeah, I think we're, yeah, we, I mean, I think to be honest, if we can get over and see Bill in Pittsburgh,
That'll be a good weekend.
Yeah.
It was a damn good weekend when he came to Gloucester anyway.
It was. I think Bill's wife may never see him again. That's the only concern. Right. A couple of other questions. Thank you very much, Sam, for all of those. There's a few others you sent through, but I think it's only fair to let other people have a go. One of the questions, which I thought was very good, was... If Newcastle get a solo deal with the Saudis, how vulnerable would that leave us in the grand scheme of things?
What this season?
Well, just ever, forever, I suppose. I mean, this season, I think we're okay because they can't do much in the next 3 months. But if the Saudis did buy into Newcastle, that does leave us probably pretty vulnerable in terms of the economic stakes, isn't it?
I don't get how Newcastle having lots of money leaves us economically unstable.
I suppose no, not unstable. I suppose it makes us.
What do you mean? Does that it means that we're the worst side?
We're the worst side at that point.
Yeah, yeah. If we're still the second worst side in the league next year, then I'm fucking giving this shit up. So we. So.
That's fair enough.
Totally agree.
Yeah.
I think it would be great because I think, in a perverse way, I think it would be great if Newcastle somehow managed to be better. And obviously, I don't really want Saudi money in rugby at all. But if that's where it ended up, and then Newcastle became a stronger side, I mean, Newcastle were the Premiership champions, you know, back in the early days because they had a load of money thrown at them and had all the superstars. And potentially that could happen again. I mean, it didn't get them huge gates then, and I doubt it would get them huge gates now because it's...
It would be the funniest sports washing investment of all time. It's like they bought Newcastle Rugby for 25 million and you got a salary cap and they still got the same shit players. They built this mega stadium, but there's still 1,000 people watching it.
Yeah, I think it's. I mean, like Snow said, there's no way we're going to be this rubbish next year. And if we are, then we deserve to be at the bottom of the league with Newcastle doing better than us. I'd rather the money went to Newcastle than I think any other club in the league.
Yeah, that's fair enough.
Yeah.
Right, is the Shed overrated? This is from Rob, Mike's brother, at Mike's underscore brother, Rob.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. Well, yeah. Hi, Rob.
Yeah, he's failing overrated, Rob.
Rob will like what I'm going to say then, probably. From
go on, then.
When we used to hang out. It's not what it used to be. No. That's not to say it's overrated. I still think it's the best experience in a ground in the UK, but compared to what it was like 15 years ago. One of the big changes, it's not just, oh, okay, it's getting more modern and, you know, people are changing and it's less working class, blah, 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 is that the capacity is so much less. There's just so much space. It used to just be rammed and that just forced an atmosphere a lot of the time.
Damn health and safety.
No, to be fair, I mean, I think that does make a difference. And, you know, it wasn't that long ago that, you know, I had people waiting, you know, 2 hours before I had to get there an hour and a quarter minimum before to get close to my spot. Now, on a sellout game, I can turn up 5 minutes to kick off. And it's not that I've got people saving me a spot, which I have, but there is space there anyway. Even if I didn't know anyone, I would still be able to get in there. It's just, it's not as packed as it was. And that, like, it does create an atmosphere when you're all rammed in like sardines. There's a lot more women and children in there, which I think is a good thing. But I think it makes it slightly...
more sanitized?
I mean... people
don't forget as well that the pitch moved away from the stand, and that also made a big difference.
Mm. Yeah, I mean, the touchline was incredibly close, wasn't it, before? Mm. But I just, it's not as good as it was, but maybe some people are saying it's better because it's more welcoming. And like I mentioned earlier, like Exeter fans will get in their hundreds. And I think that is wonderful. I think it's absolutely fantastic that we get that amount of away support in there. And that those are the games that kind of, I think, make me realise that it's nowhere near what it used to be. And we're getting outsung by the 2,000 Exeter fans that are in the shed. Come on, the rest of us, we need to make some noise and kind of bring that atmosphere back. And maybe it's just we've had quite a few years of Gloucester being shit, so we haven't had a lot to cheer about.
I think that's got an element to it. Yeah.
And actually, if we had some seasons of performing and we kind of got back that unbeaten, you know, that like the women have got that kind of we will not be beaten attitude, then I think maybe the shed will become that 16th man again and put more pressure on that fullback that's receiving the high ball and the touch judge that's trying to decide whether or not the ball bounced in or, you know, landed on the line or whatever, you know, all those sorts of things. I would love to get back to it. I mean, my son's embarrassed as hell when I'm shouting out stuff. but, you know, I was in the grandstand yesterday and I was shouting out at the under-16s game. I just kind of, and Max was asking me, he says, you're not going to be shouting on Wednesday night, are you, when he's playing there? I'm like, yeah, mate. Yeah, I am. Sorry.
I think you'd be worse, surely.
I'm going to be giving the officials the standard encouragement and advice.
I think to answer your question, Rob, I think it's probably overrated in comparison to what it used to be like that. As I agree with Snow, I don't think it's overrated in the sense of it is still probably the premier fan experience for rugby union in the country. It's still as partisan as ever. It's probably just tamed that, being a bit more tame than it has been for when we started going and Snowy experienced it, you know, 15,
and,
20
and
years
ago.
And
what I'd say to people that have maybe been in and didn't like it, don't stand on the edges, because the edges are the occasional fans.
Yeah.
You know, you've got to be between the 22s. Go in to the middle, you know, and get behind the barrier that's halfway up, because there's usually a lot of people that kind of use that barrier as a stopper, and so the bottom half is probably, you know, significantly more densely packed than the top half. So, you know, make eye contact with someone at the top and kind of, is there room up there, and make your way. Because, I mean, I remember, goodness, the back in the World Cup, you know, and we had the Japanese fans up in the shed, and my god, that was superb.
Yeah, absolutely, and the Argentinian superb fans as well, and Argentina, Georgia. I mean, the Argentina fans, by a mile, probably the most amazing supporters I've ever seen at King's Home. And the Japanese, actually not by a mile, Argentina, Japan, Scotland, in that order.
The other thing to know as well is, okay, prices have gone up a lot, but I don't think there's a better value experience you can have. And in view, as long as you're not really sure, you can get an amazing view from the shed.
Oh, yeah.
And, okay, you might have to get in there an hour early, but probably only an hour early is enough to get an absolutely cracking view on the halfway line.
Yeah,
just right height from the pitch.
Yes, you're right. It's absolutely brilliant. I mean, I was saying about the Crumbie Terrace
kids,
as well. It's exactly the same sort of thing, isn't it?
If you've got kids, then you can take a little stool, you know, and the kids can stand on it potentially. If you get on the barrier, which you've obviously got to get there a little bit earlier to actually be on the barrier that's halfway up, but that kind of guarantees you that the step below you, no one will be stood on. So that automatically gives you a little bit more elevation over the people in front.
Be a resting space.
It is a good question, though. I mean, the one thing I always think back to when I was a kid watching it, and obviously being on the other side, the grandstand steps, as they were, you're right about how packed it used to be. I mean, I remember the sort of famous game like Leicester on that sort of Tuesday night or Wednesday night or whatever it was when Tofty pinged it from the touchline. It was like you couldn't move at all. And I remember being on the grandstand side and you couldn't move. That's how packed they used to be. You used to get 11,000 into a ground where you just thought, where the hell are they getting 11,000 from? And now it's 16,000 capacity. There's a bit more space more generally. But yeah, I mean, I like
you. It depends what you want. If you want easy access to the bar and the toilets, then the middle of the shed isn't it.
No. No, quite. Just a quick note actually on that, because funny enough, it ties on. I did a couple of football trips this week. So I was up at Anfield, and it gives a really good example about how a ground and an atmosphere has got this mythical status. But actually, when we got there, I mean, don't get me wrong, incredible football ground, incredible experience to be there as an away supporter watching Southampton lose to a bunch of kids. That was great. But it was a very sanitized feel to it. My dad, who grew up in the Northwest, went to watch Liverpool quite a lot as a kid. And he said, you know, compared to the 1960s and 70s, it was very, very tame, probably for a good reason.
So is my local pub.
Yeah. Yeah. It's probably for a good, you know, and it's probably good that it isn't the same atmosphere as it was in the 1960s and 70s. But yeah, it's interesting how these things change. And then the other side of this was I was at Birmingham City on Saturday. And I just thought to myself, this is the sort of weird thing about rugby and football and how different it is, not just obviously on the pitch, but off the pitch. So I'm a Southampton fan. I'm sat in the Birmingham City home end with a couple of people who I know from work who've kindly got me a ticket. And it was the 96th minute. Southampton get a winner to go 4-3 up. And I gripped my seat and held my breath and didn't make a peep of noise, because if I did, I'd get my head kicked in. And what I love about rugby union, we said this before, is about how superb it is that you could be sat next to an Exeter fan or stood next to a Bath fan and be in that situation and not worry that you're going to get thumped. Provided you obviously, I mean, look, you know, if you overstepped the line and got into somebody's face, we can't hold, you know, at some point you're going to have to be held responsible for your own actions. But you can celebrate wholeheartedly and cheer on your team and not fear you're going to have your head kicked in. And it was just a very kind of almost visceral feeling I had there, where I thought I have to be really, really well behaved here, which I wouldn't normally be if I was a Gloucester supporter watching us do that to Bristol or something in the last minute. So just a little aside. I thought it was quite interesting that still is a massive problem for football. I think a few Quins players and a few Quins fans have previously said, oh, we should get away fans and away sections in grounds. They say that because they can't generate an atmosphere. That's basically the problem. We don't need that. We need to keep rugby in that sense as it is. Final few things. There's been a few little tweaks and changes that are going to be brought in over the next year in international rugby in particular. What do we think about no longer having Wales and Ireland wearing green and red when they play?
I think, yeah, it should have happened sooner. Massive amount of men have red-green colour deficiencies. Mm-hmm. And they struggle to watch the game. You know, my father-in-law, my two kids, you, Ed, we've all got, you know, these issues of varying degrees of severity. And I think, you know, it's like, oh, it's traditional colours and all that rest of it. I was like, yeah, but we've got to appreciate that people find it difficult. And God, how many times does the teams wear their change strip when they shouldn't and don't need to? I mean, Scotland and France did it the other day.
Yeah,
the other week,
well, that brings me on to the second bit, which is I'll come on to Snowy, which is that so from next season, the tradition of the home team, the last vestige of this tradition, the home team changing their kit when the away team clashes, will no longer happen. So, for example, Scotland and Italy and France will all play in blue. When the opposition team comes, they change their second kit. Do you think that's a... Is it just about time we just change the get rid of these traditions, or do you think we should be holding on to these with dear life, Snow?
I don't think there's any difference which way around you do it, so stick with the tradition.
Yeah, because they were both wearing, they were, everyone wears white as the second choice. I know. It's a weird thing, isn't it? It's this. Yeah.
I mean,
to be
sense.
Fair, you can have not an opinion. It's fine. You don't have to have an opinion on it. It's not a problem.
I mean, I like the way the tradition works. The home team are the team that have got both sets of kit in their locker room.
Yeah.
So they're the ones that can get their change trip when, oh, I didn't realise there'd be a clash, but it's all right because we've got the other set there. Obviously, in the modern era, you know what your opposition are going to turn up wearing. Mm. So you can plan ahead. But I quite like the fact that it's the home. It's the other way round to football. I quite like that. Mm. And is it just because it's confusing for some people? They go, why aren't Scotland wearing their navy blue?
Well, it's not consistent. It's not consistent, is it? Because elsewhere, everywhere now, it's a way strip, basically.
It's only in international rugby. International rugby is the only time
where it's still the case.
It still happens, yeah.
Yeah,
because I got confused when we played Edinburgh in the Challenge Cup. I assumed, on the basis that we were the away side, that Edinburgh would change because we had a clashing kit in terms of our European kits. That's not what happened. Ed Gloucester had to change their kit, which meant that we've played in our actual European kit twice so far.
European which kit, that's nonsense in its own.
Yeah, quite.
Yeah. Anyway,
right. I think that's been very succinct. Thank you very much, guys. Appreciate your time. We will be back next week to talk about the Six Nations. The Six Nations is back. We probably will have some sort of thoughts on the Bath Gloucester friendly, in inverted commas, next Sunday, is it, I think. Not that I think any of us are going, but we'll obviously have an idea of the result. We'll hopefully be building up to the final of the Premiership Cup, which will be a week Friday. And fingers crossed a successful week for Gloucester Rugby. Thanks very much.
Cheers.
Cheers.